Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
And away we go with installment 209 here on Growing the Game with Ballsy. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really appreciate it. If you've got a story idea you'd like me to pursue about this great game of football in Saskatchewan, email me at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com or drop me a line at Growing the Game with Ballsy on the Facebook page. This podcast is brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, Riviera Ag Seeds in Radville, Face First Medical Aesthetics in Regina, Mark Greshner Photography here in Regina, Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, also here in the Queen City. And just ahead of the Where Are They Now segment, did you catch this past Sunday's Packers-Bucks game in Tampa? Fox broadcasters Joe Buck and Troy Aikman were caught with a hot mic.
That's a lot of jet fuel just to do a little flyover.
That's your hard-earned money and your tax dollars at work.
That stuff ain't happening with Kamala Biden ticket. I'll tell you that right now, partner.
Yes, flyovers are expensive. The exact costs aren't public, but various reports estimate that it's in the neighborhood of $450,000 US. But people have debated military flyovers for years now. It's not something new. The Air Force and Navy in the US always downplays it, saying that taxpayers incur no additional costs because, quote, pilots must execute a minimum number of flight hours to maintain proficiency. So they use these flyovers as training. So that's where they can say there's no additional cost. It's already factored into the budget and covered by taxpayers. Now, I wonder how these comments are going to play on Fox, you know, mostly a right-wing station. And how about Aikman, former Dallas Cowboys quarterback, lives in Texas, and talking like that on a hot mic. I know he's from California, but still, you gotta wonder. And how do you like this one? A Tennessee Volunteers fan was so upset that his team got blown out by the Kentucky Wildcats in football last Saturday that he threw a beer bottle through his window. He told a sports radio call-in show his wife left him because of it. He tried to get her to stay by saying, quote, Tennessee football done this. I didn't do this, but she left anyway. Well, before you Rider fans start laughing and pointing fingers, I've talked to many of your drunk asses after a Rider game, so I could see this happening right here, and it probably has. I think I wanted to throw something through my TV 2009 Grey Cup, remember? 13th man? Might have been Cavis Reed I wanted to throw through my TV. Time now for the Where Are They Now segment brought to you by Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. For grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance, give Double Z Ag Sales a call out in Weyburn and Corey Zadarozniak. He's a good dude supporting football in this province at all levels. Our guest in the Where Are They Now spotlight this week is former Saskatchewan Rough Rider and Hamilton Tiger Cat, now the recruiting coordinator and defensive line coach for the UBC Thunderbirds, Shamari Williams. All right, Shamari, it's great to go down memory lane with you here. You played for the Houston Cougars. Tell me about your time there. What did you learn playing NCAA football?
I learned so much. It was such a great experience. You know, I had good coaching staff. So you just develop so much as a player. You just learn the game a lot more, right? Like playing in Canada, not to say there's anything wrong with playing in Canada, but there's so much you know, there's so much little details in the game that you probably never learned in high school, and playing at the NCAA level, you learned all those kind of things, all the little details that go into becoming a good football player. You know, your steps, you know, all the different moves that you can use, all those kind of things that make you a good football player. I think I learned all of that pretty much at the NCAA level.
And what I've found in talking with my son is the level of competition every day at practice is there, which is something that you can't mimic maybe, you know, in Canada in a lot of cases.
Yeah, the competitions, you know, everybody there is the best athlete that was the best athlete at their high school. So it's like, you know, no matter what team you go to, you're going against the best of the best from wherever they're from, right? So usually so everybody's going to be in practice every day. It's going to be a dogfight for everything that you get. Everybody's going to be everybody's good. So that was also a big adjustment for me.
You transferred to Queens. Why did you do that?
Well, I graduated from the University of Houston, so I was given opportunity. I graduated in 3 years there, mm-hmm. and I just thought it would have been better for my chances to go to the CFL if I played in Canada. And I think it, well, in hindsight, I think it kind of worked out well for me.
Yeah, it did, because you were selected number one by the Rough Riders after they made a trade with the Toronto Argonauts. What do you remember about being selected number one by our Ruffies?
My time with the Riders is still fun. Like, I love Regina. You know, I still have a place there. I still have a condo there. Just getting drafted, that whole experience of, you know, being in Saskatchewan, being the first pick overall, and I just remember just, you know, just being around everybody, BT, you know, Craig Smith, and being there one day selecting me and watching it on TV. It was just a super cool experience to be drafted first overall.
Now, Shamari, the number one pick in the CFL, definitely not the same as the number one pick in the NFL in terms of money or expectations. Was there any pressure being the number one pick coming into the Rough Riders?
I think I always put a lot of pressure on myself to try to be the best player I could have been. So I think if there was external pressure, it wasn't as much as the pressure I put on myself.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about that first stint with the Rough Riders from 2010 to 2012? Oddly enough, you left for free agency, I believe, for Hamilton in 2013, back closer to home, but that was the year the Riders won the Grey Cup on home turf.
Yeah. That's always a story of my life. I left for a year. You know, I ended up being at the Grey Cup, but I was hurt when I was there.
Yeah, right. You were with Hamilton, yeah.
Yeah. But I ended up losing it. So, and then I get traded back a couple months later. So, my first day with the Riders was great, man. It was great. We had, you know, some great teammates. We had that one year that was a down year for us. But, you know, just the experiences and just being in Saskatchewan and just learning professional football, it was a really great experience. Being in Saskatchewan has been my funnest experience being in the CFL.
So did Hamilton even have a sniff in that game? Be honest with me. Did you guys have a sniff walking into that game? I remember when I was covering it, I walked in that whole week. It was so frigidly cold. I remember the first practice, the Tiger Cats were all huddled around the heater on the sidelines, weren't even worrying about the game. And I'm like, man, this game's over. Like, that was on like a Wednesday. I'm like, they're not winning this Grey Cup.
I think it was super cold. I remember guys got frostbite at practice because I guess they, you know, taped their hands a little bit too, taped their wrists a little bit too tight, so they ended up getting frostbite and stuff like that. So it was a crazy week in terms of the cold. And I think, you know, a lot of guys, especially in Saskatchewan or playing Saskatchewan, playing any cold weather playoff games in the CFL, I think a lot of guys, you know, they psych themselves out for it. It is a huge barrier. It's tough to kind of play in that weather, but I think I don't know. I wouldn't say that we felt like we still had a chance, but I do know that the cold was definitely a factor all week in how everybody prepared and how everybody kind of handled it. Everybody was trying to figure out ways to stay warm and do all that stuff. So maybe that was on our minds a little bit too much than it should have been.
Hey, before we get to your second stint with the Riders, 2011, Greg Marshall comes in after that 2010 Grey Cup run. Did Greg Marshall really get a fair shake here? I felt like he didn't, in the sense that Ken Miller was still around the football team, and you guys had a lot of respect for Ken Miller by and large. So if he's still around the football team and he's kind of a laid-back guy, where Greg Marshall comes in a different personality, a fiery character, maybe I just felt that Greg Marshall was set up for failure. How about you?
I think just even in that season, I do think everything kind of happened quickly and happened fast. I think I was still kind of young and still kind of in my head. Like, I didn't really kind of understand the business of sport. At that point, I do think I could see your argument of why it was different, but it's such a tough league, and like, you have to win now, right? And I think,
right,
it's tough in that sense. I don't know. I think hindsight, you can always say he should have got a better shot. He should have got another shot, but I can understand why management made the decisions. I can understand all pieces of it. And I was just somebody who was just a player who just wanted to kind of do the best that I could every day on the field. That I wasn't as I wasn't as like in tune to what was going on behind the scenes as much as it was, hey, can I do my best today? Can I get on the field? You know, can I help this team win? Can I be an asset to the team, whether or not what personnel decisions they were making at top?
Do you?
I like Coach Marshall. I liked him. I thought he was doing the best job that he could at the time. But I understand that, hey, when you're losing, you know, sometimes unfortunately, you know, players get cut and sometimes coaches get fired.
Did you find more out about yourself in adversity, like in a down year like 2011, as opposed to maybe like a 2010 or 2012 when you guys had kind of a playoff team, or even 2013 when you were with Hamilton? Do you find more about yourself when you're going through an injury or going through a bad season?
Yeah, like, you know, it's going through a bad season is always tough because everything seems to be super negative, right? And you're just trying to, everybody's motivated to play. Everybody wants to do well. And then when your team's not doing well, you know, the quarterback gets it bad, the running backs get it bad, the defense gets it bad. So it's always kind of, you just have to learn how to tune everything out. And I think as kind of my career kind of went on, I learned how to kind of, you know, Twitter and stuff was just really becoming popular, right? And all those social media stuff. So, but I learned even earlier, or after a few years in the league, that, hey, you got to tune all that stuff out. And, you know, I guess when I first started playing, it was like, you know, you can't listen to the newspaper clippings. But then when you get to social media, it's like, man, you can play a bad game and you can go on the internet and everybody's ripping you. So you learn quickly. You got to learn to tune that stuff out too.
So you were with Queens, your alma mater, and you're with UBC now as a recruiting coordinator, D-line coach. Did you always have an eye for talent? Is that something you've got to have, or can you grow into becoming a good talent evaluator?
Well, you know, I think I've been doing it for so long. So even when I was in the CFL, even when I was in university, I was always helping other kids get scholarships. So I was helping, you know, a whole bunch of other kids get to the next level. Like, you know, Frederick Pulisic, who plays in the CFL, you know, I helped him get a scholarship. You know, Phillip Blake, I helped him get a scholarship to Baylor. There was so many guys that even when I was playing, I was helping getting to the next level. And I had a little business that I was doing on the side. So I do think it's something, especially when you play the game, you can kind of see what talent coaches are looking for. But it's something that I think you just learn as you're kind of doing it, and learn as you kind of grow, being a recruiting coordinator and finding out what's going to be successful. And then now, you know, doing it at the university level, like, I know kind of, like, I recruit guys who I think are going to have the skill set to play in the CFL. So the guys who are going to be the athletic enough to play in the CFL. And so I've just kind of, just from being around football, playing at a high level of it, you just kind of learned what coaches are looking for or what skills really translate.
How challenging is it, you know, in our new world here right now, lately, to be a recruiting coordinator when you can't go watch any games, you can't go to other provinces, they can't come there? Like, there are a lot of restrictions. It's an interesting time for you.
Yeah, like, you know, it's challenging in the sense of, because kids can't come on campus and you can't really go and see them. But, you know, I think, just at least for our staff and for how I kind of do my job, like, you kind of know who the good players are when they're in grade 11. So I've kind of already, even before COVID hit, I already knew the kids who are going to be the kids we were going to kind of recruit and who the top players were. So it hasn't been so hard in that sense. I think actually what's probably going to be the hardest part is the kids next year, because they won't have grade 11 film for us to evaluate. And we'll want to make decisions earlier on in the recruiting process. You know, we want to, you know, by April, I want to know who the best players in the country are. And I don't know if I can do that with kids who just have grade 10 tape, right? Because they might have been playing JV. They might not. They probably haven't played at a high-level competition. So I think actually next year's class is actually going to be a little bit harder for us, or a lot of decisions are going to be made super late in the recruiting process, just because you have to watch their senior film and see how they kind of progress. So that's going to be super interesting next year, how it's going to go. But I think for this year, like, we've done a really good job as a staff of kind of, even though you can't come on campus, showing kids what campus is like here. We've done a good job building relationships. You know, Zoom calls have been, like, super great for us. You know, we have about 8 recruits right now that have signed, and we all feel they're all top players in the country. So, I don't know. I think I'm in a good spot even with it. So, you know, I know Coach Neil, he's always like, man, we should never do recruiting visits again, because it's been going so well for us. So it's challenging, but I think we've kind of lived up to the challenge.
What makes you a good talent evaluator? A recruiter, I guess, is the better way to look at it. We talked about talent evaluating. What makes Shamari Williams a good recruiter? Like, what would be one of your attributes to bring the kids in? Like, what, you know, how can you hook them in?
Yeah, so I still feel like I'm young, and I'm kind of like hip to what all the kids want and what all the kids kind of need, and I'm just super relentless on kids. I think me and Coach Nill are a good tag team, and what we kind of built for a program, and I'm just really good at kind of reiterating that message to kids and kind of just building that relationship with kids. I think, you know, I'm super savvy on the internet and with where the mediums where kids are, so I'm able to kind of reach them where they are and just kind of build that relationship and kind of be, you know, a person that they can kind of trust and make a good decision. And then I think what makes, even with Coach Neal, is just that, you know, the family relationships that we're able to build with all these players, you know, just making sure that, you know, we're not just recruiting the player, we're recruiting the entire family so that they can feel comfortable, you know, sending their kid all the way to Vancouver. So I think I've learned a lot from him in that sense, and just how to kind of include the family and make the family better. And I'm just good job of building that relationship, even with the young players that we want in our program.
Any advice you got for kids that are listening to this that are trying to get noticed, you know, especially in COVID, especially guys like, you know, grade 10 for grade 11 film? Because I've said this before, you know, there's that saying, Shamari, that if you're good enough, they'll find you. I say that's bullshit. You got to make them find you. You got to make them see you. So what kind of advice do you have?
Yeah, you know, I would say for kids, yeah, like, I think you're completely right. Like, you know, we're in an age now where you can, you know, you can promote yourself. And I would tell kids to kind of really promote themselves, you know, try to get in contact with coaches. You know, most coaches have, you know, a front rush or a recruiting kind of list that they build. Fill out that information just to make sure you're on their list. And eventually the coaches will, you know, they'll kind of get to and evaluate you. And I think just being relentless, right? Just trying to get an answer. And I think the other thing kids have to be comfortable with is hearing no, right? So you have to kind of make sure you get an answer out of coaches. And, you know, if the coach doesn't want to recruit you, hey, there's, you know, in Canada, there's 26 other teams that can recruit you, right? So don't be afraid to hear no. And don't kind of leave yourself in limbo where you're waiting for a school. Try to get an answer out of a school. Yes, they're going to recruit you. No, they're not. So that you can move on and you can start focusing on the schools that are recruiting you or that want you in their program.
Shamari, what kind of club were the UBC Thunderbirds going to be coming into the season before it got called off? What kind of team were you looking at here?
Yeah, I think we would have been good. I think we're, you know, obviously we're super young. We had a bad year last year. But I thought we brought in some really good impact players that can kind of help us. I think we would have still been, you know, a super young team, but I do think we would have been a playoff team and been able to kind of compete. And I think in this Canada West, as soon as you get into the playoffs, then anything can happen. But I did think that we would have easily been a playoff team this year with the kind of impact recruits that we had.
What do you think of Nick Cross on your team? He's a guy that made an impact with the Rams, obviously. Went and played some junior ball. Now he's back with you guys. Your thoughts on Nick Cross?
Nick is my favorite player. Man, that kid's something special. I think he has the ability to play to play on defense in the CFL. Like I couldn't say enough good things about him. The only, you know, I think he could have been, you know, easily he was the best defender to me in Canada West this year, probably even in the country watching some of the other kids. The plays that he can make, you know, is this ability, you know, the dog that he kind of has in him, like his mentality, the way how he approaches the game, you know, I think, man, he's going to be fun to watch. You know, I think, obviously, I don't know if they did him justice where he is, where he's ranked in the rankings, but I think he's going to turn a lot of heads, and I think he's going to have a long CFL career and be a player that can definitely impact the game on defense. Even if it's, you know, I like, obviously it's tough to play Sam in the CFL, but I think, man, he's going to be a player that you're going to just try to find a way to get on the field.
What do you think of Saskatchewan kids in general and the talent we've got coming out of this province as it relates to high school football?
You know, the talent level is always good. It's just tough to get them out of Saskatchewan. That's always the toughest thing. Mm-hmm. You know, U of R and U of S does a really good job of keeping their talent at home. And so it's always challenging for programs like us to get kids out of Saskatchewan. But I think, man, there's high-level players. You know, you see that every year in the Canada Cup, where the team aspect of it, they're super good. I think, especially on the lineman side, there's always a bunch of linemen out of in Saskatchewan that you can kind of recruit. Linebacker is always a really good position. I think it's super good. I think if teams could figure out a way to kind of get in Saskatchewan and just steal a couple of the good players, there'd be a lot, you know, a lot more teams, a lot better teams out here. But a coach, both of those coaches at both of those programs in Saskatchewan do a good job of keeping the talent at home.
Well, and part of it too is you can only offer what you can offer, right? And it's a same set of rules right across the board. So if a kid's leaving from the Prairies, you know, it can be expensive proposition to move a couple provinces away, especially when you want to see your kid play and all that type of stuff. So there are other factors. There's no doubt about that in there, Shamari. What's your end game? Where does Shamari Williams want to be in 5 years? What's your end game?
I think if I can just keep on just growing as being a coach, just growing as being a leader, and just trying to keep growing and just trying to grow in this profession and see where it kind of takes me. It would be cool to say, my goal is to kind of become a head coach and do all those things. You know, I think those are all realistic goals for myself, but I think I just have to kind of just take it one day at a time and just try to be, right now, just be the best recruiting coordinator I can be, try to help build the championship, and just kind of take it as it comes and see the opportunities that lie in front of me. I think I'm open to having all those kind of big dreams in the next 5 years, but I think right now, to say 5 years from now, I just want to be the best at my position and just trying to keep growing. I don't want to say, hey, in 5 years I need to be a head coach. I just want to say, hey, I just want to be the best recruiter in the country, you know, the best special teams best coordinator at my job, and just try to keep growing from there and then see the opportunities that come in front of me.
Okay, last one then. Who is the best coach you've ever been around, either, through osmosis, watching them coach and being on their staff, or actually playing for a coach? Who's the best? Can you give me one or two?
Oh, geez. The best coach that I think I've had is Coach Walker. So Mike Walker, he was my D-line coach in Saskatchewan. Just a super, super good guy, right? And I think the biggest thing that I kind of learned from him is just trying to be a teacher of the game. And that's kind of what I want to try to be as a coach, is just be a teacher, right? So meet the kids where they are, teach them where they are, teach them, you know, just teach them the game the best way, right? So I don't want to be the guy who's, what do you call it? I want to, you know, Etch always had it, like, Etch could always take whoever he had, like, even Coach Etcheverry, he would always take whoever he had on the roster, and he'd kind of make the defense work around their skill set.
Right.
And I think those are great qualities to have as a coach, where it doesn't matter who your roster is, you're just going to build your team around what you have, and then being able to just teach guys how to be good at their position. So I would argue both of those coaches are probably the most influential in terms of who I want to be as a coach, in terms of hey, whatever you have as a roster, you got to learn to live with it. And then in Coach Walker's case, is just teaching, being a great teacher. So not just being a coach, not just being a kind of a dictator, trying to just teach the kids the best way that that they know how to learn, so you can get the most out of them.
Well, my favorite thing about the recruiting process was meeting guys like you. I can vouch for you. Shamari Williams treated my son really, really well in the recruiting process. So thanks for this, Shamari. I appreciate it, my friend.
No problem, man. Anytime. Thank you so much.
Well, just before we get to our pick six for SAS Selects Football, I wanted to put this on your radar. I got some exciting programming news coming soon as it relates to the CanWest. So if you're a CanWest football fan, or you have some friends or family that are playing in CanWest football, you'll want to be listening to this podcast, because I got some great news coming up here in the very near future. I think we'll all be excited for that, because we don't have football this year. Time now for our pick six, brought to you by SAS Selects Football, building the stars of tomorrow today out there at the R Center in Moose Jaw. Zelko and Deb Stefanovic doing a great job. They're wrapping up their 7-on-7 league this coming weekend. Now, with the recent snow on the ground, I'm not sure it'll be played outside or indoors at the Yar Center. More details on that to come. Number one in Ballsy's pick six. If Brown fans have seen it once, they've seen it a million times. Their team walked into Heinz Field and got stomped. The Browns went full brownies in a 38-7 blowout loss to the Steelers that might actually have been worse than the score indicated, if that's even possible. Baker Mayfield had bruised ribs coming into this one, so I'll give him a bit of a break as it relates to this game. But he appears to be the weak link on that football team. Too small to see over the line, and too slow to run to the edge away from pressure. Canadian Chase Claypool had 4 catches for 74 yards and a touchdown for the Steelers on a short run, tying him with Randy Moss, Calvin Ridley, Willie Gault, and Martavis Bryant, another former Steeler, for most touchdowns scored by a rookie through 5 games since 1970. Mapletron's got 6 touchdowns, and he's a rising star. Number 2 on Ballsy's Pick 6, anybody that tells you running backs are overrated, well, they just don't get it. And just don't watch Titan games, okay? Derrick Henry's 212 yards, which included a 94-yard touchdown run in which he looked superhuman by breaking a tackle and accelerating away from multiple defenders before reaching a speed of just over 21 miles an hour. Should I tell you Henry weighs 247 pounds, by the way? And another fantastic performance from quarterback Ryan Tannehill, who was 30 of 41, completing just over 73% of his passes for 364 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 1 interception. He has been way better than he was in Miami. He's healthier, but nobody saw this coming. He's 14 and 4 as a starter. Then again, he didn't have Derrick Henry in his backfield. Go tell Henry that running backs are overrated, and he'll swat you away with one of those stiff arms. Number 3 on Ballsy's Pick 6. The New England Patriots have had to reshuffle their offensive line because of injuries and COVID-19 precautions prevented them from practicing much in recent weeks. But the Titans have faced similar issues, and they're a perfect 5-0. The Patriots are in third place in the AFC East with a 2-3 record, the first time they've been below 500 this late in the season since 2002. Now, it's too soon to count them out, and I'm not, but they need another weapon at receiver. They better make a deal for a receiver by the deadline. If they do that, they still got a chance to win the division. Sorry, Bills fans. Number 4 on Ballsy's Pick 6, the biggest flop this season, the Vikings. They fell to 1-5 with a 17-point loss at home to the previously winless Atlanta Falcons, who just fired their coach. The Vikings were behind 23-0 at one point, and Kirk Cousins tossed 3 more picks, all in the first half. Cousins now has a league-high 10 interceptions this season, and Minnesota can't easily dump him after this year either. The 2-year contract extension that he signed in March means he carries a $31 million cap hit next year, with his $21 million base salary fully guaranteed. He's got the best job in the United States. Somebody should be fired for giving him that contract. He's terrible. I can't decide who's worse, Baker Mayfield or Kirk Cousins. Number 5 on Ballsy's Pick 6, Brady and the Bucks outduel Rodgers and the Packers. I haven't seen two guys that old go head-to-head since, well, the last dueling town hall meetings in the States. The Buccaneers shut down the Packers' high-powered offense. A big reason the Bucks were able to do that is because of constant pressure on Aaron Rodgers. Tampa's defense sacked Rodgers a total of 4 times. Check out these stats from the final 3 quarters. Rodgers was 8 for 23 for 53 yards, 4 sacks, 2 picks, and a passer rating of 7.34. The Bucks are for real, folks. The schedule's lining up for them. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the NFC. Number 6 on Ballsy's Pick 6. I've said this many times. I wouldn't want to play defense right now in the CFL or the NFL. Speaking of the NFL, scoring is up and holding is down. So is it any surprise there are all sorts of crazy comebacks in the NFL this season? No, and that wasn't a quiz. The Indy Colts rallied from 21-0 down to defeat the Cincinnati Bengals by a score of 31-27, and in the process ensured at least one team has overcome a deficit of 16 points or more in each of the first 6 weeks of the season. It's the first time that happened in NFL history, and no, we can't just blame the Falcons for blowing leads. Oh, and by the way, this just in, it looks like Phillip Rivers isn't done yet as a quarterback. 2 more extra points. We'll call this the 2-point conversion. How about 2 standout plays? In the Vikings-Falcons game, Atlanta DB A.J. Terrell made an interception with his legs. You've probably seen it by now. What a great pick. And in the Jets-Dolphins game, New York defender Marcus May made a pick behind his back while pinning the ball to his ass cheek. So is that a butt pick or a buttception? By the way, in that game, congratulations to former Rider Sam McGuavin. Finished the game with two total tackles, one tackle for a loss, and a pass knockdown, as the Dolphins did improve to 3-3 with a 24-0 win. And they just announced, as I'm taping this podcast, that Tua is the starting quarterback for the team going forward. Brooks Alberta's Ajoa Joe juked and jived his way through the entire Georgia Tech University defense for a 35-yard touchdown, his first in the NCAA last Saturday. It was the final score for Clemson in a 73-7 rout of the Yellow Jackets as the number one ranked Tigers improved to 5-0. Now, the 18-year-old Ajoa Joe is the first Canadian to earn a scholarship from Clemson. He attended the Dabo Swinney football camp in the summer of 2019, which was his first trip to Memorial Stadium. Now, coming out of 2020 in Canada, it was widely regarded that Ajoa Joe was the top receiving prospect, and I have to say it, my son Ethan was the second prospect coming out. I'm going to give this as a piece of advice to parents and anybody listening to this podcast. You always hear, if you're good enough, they'll find you. That's bullshit, okay? You have to make them find you. So in his case, he went down to a camp in Clemson. My son traveled with Zelko through the Midwest, Big Ten schools, and then went to South Dakota State and had schools follow him. Then we went down to North Dakota and eventually ended up in North Dakota. You can send tape out and that's great. They actually need to have their eyeballs on you and do the eyeball test on you. And it might get a little frustrating. They might slow play you. They offer this guy, they offer this guy, they offer this guy, and that guy turns them down, that guy turns them down, that guy turns them down, and then they get to you on the list. So just be patient. Make sure you get your name out there and don't let COVID stop you. Get out there somehow and be seen, because they're not going to find you unless you make them find you.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.